Desire prayers, your prayers this morning for multiple things. One thing in particular is that my voice would hold out till I can try to express what's on our heart today. So we all, I think, are aware of the passing of Brother Ben Kegley, and these are thoughts that what I'm going to say this morning is some of the thoughts that I expressed while I was there for his service. It's always difficult to lose a loved one, family member. For them to not be there in your life any longer is a very difficult thing. But when it's a young man, a young woman, it's especially difficult. And so my heart went out to the family and those there of how their emotions had to be so inflamed. I was thinking about our emotions in a much broader spectrum. And I read something that differentiated between emotions and our feelings. And then I put the little word mindset besides feelings. So somewheres we go in our humanity, we go from having emotions to then we have feelings, and then somewheres along the line we develop convictions. All right, so I'd just like to, we're not talking about convictions this morning, but I'd like to think about how one of the comments in this little article I read was how we should not allow emotions to drive our feelings, okay? So let's think about some of the examples that we have in the scripture that sometimes the emotion is very felt in the words, and sometimes it's perceived by the setting. Let's turn first to Genesis, the 4th chapter. And we all know the account that happened here. We have an account where Cain and Abel both brought an offering to the Lord. And we're going to read beginning in verse 5. It says, "But unto Cain and his offering he had not respect," or God had not respect, "and Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell." So we have an emotional setting here where he had prepared an offering and went through the motions of offering it to God, but it says that God did not accept that. And we could go into all of the nuances of why he didn't accept it, and that's maybe a point for another discussion, but just the reality that something is not accepted, that it, the rejection we feel is an emotion, right? And when I feel rejection, it causes all kinds of sensations in my head, maybe in my body. And rejection is one of these things none of us like. I don't like rejection. You don't like rejection. There's nobody here that's just looking for an opportunity to be rejected. But it goes on to say that Cain was wroth. So to me, this gives us a picture that the emotion Cain felt, he allowed that to change a feeling that he had. So he let rejection cause him to begin to be angry. And angry If it's one thing to for something to make us angry, it's another thing for us to adopt a feeling of anger or wrath. So it says here that Cain was very wroth and his countenance fell. So I would say he was discouraged. That's another emotion, isn't it? He was rejected. Then he felt angry. Then his countenance fell. And it says here, and the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth? Why is your mindset on anger? And why is thy countenance fallen? Why are you discouraged? Well, I'm sure it made perfect sense in Cain's mind because I was rejected. I had this emotion, and now I'm angered because I was rejected. And then my feeling goes down even further, and I have another emotion. You see how it feeds on what a negative emotion can, if we let it, drive a feeling, and the feeling can cause another emotion, which escalates into something else. We have emotions and feelings and emotions and feelings, and before you know it, we've spiraled down to the point that what did Cain do? His feelings became an action, and his action only caused more problems because it was all driven. He allowed himself to be driven by an emotion. So I'm just bringing this up for an illustration. I want us to picture that we're not the only ones that have emotions. I'd like to turn to 2 Samuel in the 18th chapter and notice some words here. In the setting here is another story that I would venture that all of us are familiar with. 18 and 33 is what we're going to read. 2 Samuel, not 1 Samuel. 2 Samuel 18. And the setting here is where Absalom had attempted to set himself up king. And he had actually was collecting quite a force behind him. And there became conflict between David's men and Absalom's men. And they went out, David's men, Joab being the leader, went out and pursued Absalom. And we know what happened to Absalom, right? We know that story. Got his hair hung in the tree as he was riding under it. And anyway, Absalom... 18 and 33 of 2 Samuel, they came and told the king, king said in verse 32, and the king said unto Cushai, is the young man Absalom safe? Why would he ask that question? Wasn't Absalom his enemy? But Absalom was his son. And there is something about when it's our child, sometimes we put their actions, even if it is life-threatening to us, we put their actions on hold. That's my little boy. That's my little girl. That's my child. And David said, is the young man Absalom safe? And Cushai answered, he answered as tactfully as he knew how to answer in this high-pressure situation. He said, the enemies of my lord, the king, and all that rise against thee to do thee hurt, be as that young man is. Now, that's about as smooth as you can say, your son is dead. I've often marveled at the words he used. And so David's emotions immediately just went off the charts. And it says, and the king was much moved, emotions, you see, and he went to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, as he was walking along, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would God I had died for thee. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Can you see the emotion here? It's very evident that David had a very emotional experience when he realized that Absalom was no longer alive. Absalom was dead. And his emotions caused him... You know, if we have an emotional experience, it is not uncommon for us to immediately withdraw. There's an immediate knee-jerk reaction that we can, it's almost impossible for us to not have some type of involuntary reaction to emotions. If somebody comes spitting and screaming in our face and telling us how horrible of a person that we are, you know that we, it's hard for us to not to have an immediate reaction, an immediate thought of what could I have done different? I mean, they're just, maybe we feel like David. Maybe we feel so wounded, and maybe we feel like Cain. We feel rejection. Maybe we start to feel anger. All of these things that start coming into, it's an emotional, we have emotional experiences. We are people and we have emotions. And David's grief was very real. Even though Absalom more or less was threatening to take David's life, it was still emotional to realize this is your little boy that's dead now. And this guy that told it done a very good job of easing it into it, you know, telling him his son was dead. But we are not, if you think that it's just a weakness of just human spirit, let's turn to Matthew, the 27th chapter. And we notice the situation here is Jesus, I believe, is on the cross being crucified. 27th chapter of Matthew, and the 46th verse, maybe 45 beginning. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, this is just maybe moments or minutes, maybe a very short time before Jesus' life expired on the cross. And it says, about the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani." And even Bible commentators don't know what language that is. So don't feel confused. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? This is Jesus himself, and his emotions were raw with the thought of being all alone on a cross, feeling the weight of the sins of all mankind. All of those in the Old Testament that had been faithful and offered sacrifices and rolled their sins forward, and all the sins of the men that were around him, and the ones that he had said, "Thy sins be forgiven thee, go and sin no more." He felt the weight of all of that. It's hanging on this cross. And he, up until that point, he had felt his Father's approval. God had said on the day that he was baptized, this is my well-beloved Son in whom I'm well... Anyway, you understand what he said. This is the one that I support. This is my Son. And hear ye him. And here Jesus felt all alone. You ever felt alone? Can be a pretty emotional experience, can it? And Jesus felt very emotional here. And he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Just like David had said, "Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. I wished I could have died in your stead." I'd like to read another one. Acts, the 12th chapter. In the 14th verse, This was a good one. We can have good emotions too. Peter had been in jail. You remember that? And when he got out, it said he came and knocked, verse 13, Acts chapter 12, and Peter knocked at the door of the gate. A damsel came to hearken named Rhoda. And when she saw when she knew Peter's voice, she opened not the gate for gladness. She got so excited, instead of opening the gate and letting Peter in, she ran and told how Peter stood before the gate. And if we read some more of this story, they said unto her, "Thou art mad." Can't you imagine this? It was a turmoil of emotions. I mean, she was so excited and so happy that Peter was at the gate. She didn't offer to let him in. And she went back in and said, what were they doing there in that house? You remember? They were praying for Peter because he was in prison. What were they praying for? That he'd stay in prison? I don't think so. I think they was praying that the Lord would deliver him. And yet when it happened, they told the girl that she was crazy. "You're mad? There's no way Peter can be at the gate." And she had to convince them that Peter was really there. Emotions, you see. It was a powerful thing. And these people that maybe they'd been pouring their heart out for Peter to get released, and instead of feeling relieved that he was at the gate and somebody saying, "Well, let him in," they just told her, "You've got to be crazy. There is no way Peter can be there." An emotional experience. And it is so easy for our emotions. Now, they let their emotions drive their feeling because they could not believe that Peter could actually be at the gate. Another emotional experience I'd like to look at is in John, the 21st chapter. This is after Jesus had been resurrected from the grave. And we find, it says, after these things, verse 1, chapter 21, St. John, after these things, Jesus shewed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and on this wise shewed he himself. They were together, Simon Peter and Thomas, called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two other of his disciples. And if I've counted up right, there's seven of them. And Simon Peter said unto them, "I go fishing." After these things, after Jesus had resurrected from the grave and he had come and made an attempt to show them that it was really him, and Thomas had said, I won't believe it until I put my fingers in his hands, or put my hand in his side and his fingers in my fingers in his hand. You got to show me. He just was not willing to believe it. You know, the disciples had felt like Jesus was going to set up a kingdom on this earth, wasn't it? And they were disappointed. And when Jesus was crucified, they were heartbroken. And even though Peter was there and had actually seen the Lord after he had been resurrected, he was still discouraged. And he was disappointed that things weren't turning out like he anticipated. And he said, "I go fishing." This is where our emotions can start driving our feelings and our mindset. What's the use of going around and telling people that Jesus is the Son of God? What's the use of going and telling people that he can heal your body and he can save your soul and you can you can be a different person. What's the use of all of that? It seems like it's all collapsed. And he allowed his emotions. You know, Peter was discouraged. And Peter said, I go fishing. And our mindset many times can be driven by my emotions to the point that instead of conquering my emotion with God's help, we let it drive our mindset. No use trying any longer. I'll just go back to fishing. They don't want to hear what I got to say. It doesn't look like that it's working out like it ought to. So I'll just go back to fishing. I won't make the effort to contribute to the cause of God anymore because I've lost hope. I'm discouraged. You see, that's the emotion. You know, discouragement is a very powerful tool in the hands of the enemy. He can discourage me. You think I've lived 60 years plus and not been discouraged? I've had my episodes with discouragement. I've had my episodes with feeling rejected, disappointed, alone. I've had all of those. But by the grace of God, I've rose above those things. I could start on a disappointed list this morning for you and get you all in the mully grubs. And Peter was disappointed. So he said, I just go do something that brings me a little fulfillment. I'll go fishing. And you know what the rest of them said? They say unto him, we also go with thee. Some of them were fishermen in the past, and I think some of them weren't. Okay? Some of them had been fishermen with Peter, maybe James and John, and some of them had never been fishermen. But they all decided, Peter, if your mindset, if your feelings now is that we ought to just be fishermen, we'll just all go with you. So they all went fishing. And how well did that turn out for them? Not very good. They fished all night. And folks, I'll tell you, it don't take me all night of fishing to decide I want to do something different. In fact, I'm probably one of the most impatient fishermen you have ever met in your life. You take me fisherman and we don't catch fish, I'm ready to go work on a car somewhere. I'm just being real plain with you. Let's go do something that brings me some level of fulfillment because fishing has never been my thing. It's too risky. But they'd been good at it, and they went. They'd been good at it. Did you hear what I said? They had a boat, they had a net, they had the equipment. They went out at the time that they felt like would be appropriate, and they fished all night long, and they didn't catch anything. You know what happened? Jesus come by again in the 15th verse. And this is what the first verse is talking about when it says, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. In the 15th verse, it says, and when they had, well, back up a little bit. In the 10th verse, well, I got to get way up here. I read too much this morning. In the 5th verse, it says, Jesus saith unto them, children, he called to them from the shore, have you any meat? They answered and said, no. Fished all night. I don't have nothing. Nothing to show for it. And yet, my feelings drove me to do. You know that if we allow our feelings to be driven by our emotions, we'll probably end up empty-handed. There's a real good chance we'll end up with a net that's empty, that a boat that's empty. But Jesus cares. He's touched with the feelings of our infirmity. He's touched with our feelings. He's touched with our emotions. And he come by to check on his disciples. He said, "You got any meat?" And they said, "No." They didn't really know who it was. And he said unto them, "Cast your net on the other side of the ship, and you shall find." And they did it. I believe they did it out of desperation. I've heard lots of people explain that they were fishing on one side of the boat because that's the way you were supposed to do it. I don't know. I don't know anything about fishing. I would have fished on both sides already if I'd fished all night. But they didn't. They'd only fished on one side of the boat. They put their nets on the other side, and the fish all swam in the net. And by this time, it says that John, it's what it says in the seventh verse, doesn't call him John, but that's what it, who it was. He got the glimpse that had to be Jesus. There's no way that putting a net on the other side of the boat would make the net get full. That has to be Jesus. And when Peter heard it, Peter's the emotional one. Peter's the one that said, "I go fishing." Peter's the one that said, "Lord, I'll go with you all the way." Peter's the one that said, "I don't know that man." And Peter immediately girded up his fisher's coat and cast himself in the sea. This is the Lord. When John told him, that has to be Jesus up on the bank that asked us, "Do we have any meat?" So he throwed himself in the sea, and I think he was coming to the shore. As soon as they got to the land, they found that there was fish on some coals of fire. Jesus cooking them fish. Well, nobody knows how Jesus got his fish, but anyway, they got up there, and Jesus said, "Bring of the fish which ye have caught." Without reading, you boys know how many fish they caught that day? Oh, there's a specific number in the scripture, 153. Put that on a hook somewhere. And so Simon and Peter went up and drew the net to the land full of great fishes, 153. And all were there, there were so many, yet not the net broken. And Jesus said, "Come and dine." So as they were eating, 15th verse, so when they had ate, Jesus said to Simon Peter. Simon Peter is the one that instigated the fishing, right? He's the one that he allowed his emotion of discouragement to drive his feeling to where he was despondent. Discouragement brings despondency if we don't allow God to help us put a check on our emotions. Say, "That's enough. I'm not going to accept that any further." He became despondent and he said, "I might as well go fishing." And you know, my feelings will impact other people's feelings. And if you're negative, if you have a negative perspective and a negative mindset, you'll affect other people. A lot of times it's not good. There was at least six other disciples that was with Peter that when Peter said, "I'll go fishing," they said, "Well, we'll go too. We'll just go with you. I don't know what else to do. I see, I know why you're discouraged. I know why you're despondent. I know why you don't feel like you can do, that it's worth putting your life into this any longer. We'll just go with you." So they went with him, and none of them caught anything till Jesus come along. And when Jesus come along, they had a net so full that it should have broke, and it didn't. 153, remember that. Caught 153 fish in one net. After they had ate, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me more than these?" And he said, Yea, Lord, thou knowest I love thee. How did Jesus know he loved him? Because Peter just went fishing. Peter had abandoned Jesus for fishing. You know, we can abandon the Lord for fishing. I don't know what fishing is to you. It's not fishing for me. It's something else. But we can abandon the cause for something else, for fishing. And that's what Peter did. And Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. He said, Peter, I don't want you going fishing and abandoning your call. Go feed my lambs. And he said to him again, Simon Peter, lovest thou me? And he said, yea, Lord, thou knowest I love thee. And he said, feed my sheep. And the Lord, and he said unto him the third time, Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me? And Peter was grieved the third time. And he said, Lord, thou knowest all things. Thou knowest I love thee. And Jesus does know all things. And he does know that your emotions will drive your feelings if we're not careful. And he knows that my emotions will drive my feelings and my mindset. And I will say, what's the use? And why should I care? And all of those other things that we have subconsciously said to ourselves and in our minds down through time, those of us that's lived a while. And if we're not careful, we'll be just like Peter and say, what's the use of trying to uphold, to withstand, to promote, to give of our energy to the cause? What's the use of all of that? I'll just go fishing. I'll just do something that's familiar to me, and in the past it brought satisfaction. But Jesus brought Peter back, and he said, the third time when Peter said, Lord, thou knowest all things, you know me. Yes, he does know Peter. He knew that Peter let his emotions drive his feelings. He knew that Peter allowed his discouragement to get him off track to where he abandoned the cause. And he said, feed my sheep. Feed my sheep. Be faithful. Go back and do what I called you to do. You know, I think Jesus would have been more pleased if Peter hadn't went fishing. I think Peter would have been a better servant, as Sister Jeannie used to say, if he hadn't went fishing. But the Lord didn't give up on him, and that's important. The 21st, well, we'll back up a little bit here. You think about Jesus hanging on the cross. And he said, you remember what he said at that time of great emotion? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? He felt all alone. He felt like everything had been pulled, all the props had been pulled out from under him. And yet between that point, this was moments before his life expired, between that point and when he got back with his disciples, he was able to put that emotion in subjection to the cause. I'll notice a verse here in John 20, in verse 22. Well, maybe verse 20, 19 starting. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for the fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in the midst and said unto them, peace be unto you. And when he said so said, he shewed unto them his hands and his side. Then the disciples were the disciples glad when they saw the Lord? Now, if Jesus had allowed his emotions to drive his feelings and his mindset, when he got back in the presence of his disciples, he might have said something different. He might have said, "You're the reason that I had to hang on the cross without any support, why I felt forsaken, why I felt so alone." But instead of that, he said, when he stood in the midst, "Peace be unto you." Then said Jesus unto them, "Peace be unto you, as my Father has sent me, even so send I you. As I have been sent, and I am not moving off of the cause that I came to this earth in the beginning, so send I you." Peter was there when he heard that. And yet he let his feelings be driven by his emotions. And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said unto them, "Receive ye the Holy Spirit," or the Holy Ghost. Do you know that Jesus wanted the best for his disciples, even though he had come through a very difficult place? Lord, help us today to be able to come through the difficult emotional injuries sometimes, experiences that we have. You know, in my life, I've bumped my head a lot. Sometimes to the point that it bleeds. Sometimes it puts little knots on my head. And when you hit your head and there's this jarring sensation, this happened Friday, it's like, oh, it can be emotion. You know, I've seen people let that drive their feelings and they start swinging at stuff. It don't ever turn out good. Sometimes if they swing at stuff with their fist, they'll tear their hands all up. Sometimes if they use a hammer or a wrench or something, that don't turn out good either. But it's an emotional thing to bump your head. And we can have those experiences, and you better just go sit down and say, "Lord, help me. That hurt. That really hurt." You know, we can have some emotional experience where somebody, there's something that happens that it's like, "Oh, that hurts." It might be disappointment. It might be rejection. It might be accusations. But we feel that emotion rise up within us, and it's like, "Lord, help us here. I don't want to let that drive my attitude and my feeling and my mindset to where I come up and say, 'Well, I don't like you either.'" You know, we can do that. People have done that in the past. Jesus didn't let that happen. But our emotions is just as real and just as vivid and just as valid as David's was, as Cain's was, as Rhoda's was, as Christ was. We have emotions just like them. And I want to take particular notice that David, ultimately, King David, didn't let his emotions drive his feelings long term. But initially he did. When he went up to his chamber or whatever, and he was crying, "Absalom, my son, oh Absalom, my son." And his emotions were so raw at that time. You know, he hid away by himself and he wouldn't come out. In the 19th chapter of 2 Samuel, he got a visit from Joab. I can't be Joab to you. But some of us, maybe all of us, need a Joab. Joab talked to King David real straight. And I'm not going to read it all because of time, and I don't want to be tedious, but you might ought to read the 19th chapter, at least the first part of it, and get a picture of what happened. And Joab came to the king. Let's see, I want to read a verse here that I think... let's read verse 5. And Joab came into the house of the king and said, "Thou hast shamed this day the faces of all thy servants, which this day have saved thy life, and the lives of thy sons and of thy daughters, and the lives of thy wives and the lives of thy concubines. In that thou lovest thy enemies, this is what you shamedest by, that thou lovest thine enemies and hatest thy friends, for thou hast declared this day that thou regardest neither princes nor servants. For this day I perceive that if Absalom had lived and all that had died this day, then it had pleased thee well." Joab went to the king and said, "You know, I think you would have been happy if Absalom would have been left alive and everybody else, if I was dead and all these other men that was protecting you had died today, you would be happy." And it got David to thinking. And David, because of that conversation, David got his emotions in control. And he did not let it drive his feelings and his mindset. And I believe this is why we have family, and we have friends, and we have a congregation. And in Hebrews 10 and 25, it says, "Not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." I want to ask us, what does it mean to exhort one another? What does that mean to us? I believe all of us here can be a Joab to one another. Maybe it's, sometimes it may be pretty direct. And sometimes it may be kind of consequential. But we can encourage one another to check our emotions and to not allow our emotions to drive our feelings and our mindset. Otherwise, we'll all go fishing like Peter did. We'll all get off track. And the Lord has abundant mercy, and He wants us all. I don't want anyone here to go home feeling like you've been caught fishing when you should have been doing something else and there's no hope for you. Because that's another emotion that the devil would like to use to discourage us. But if you're fishing today and you should have been feeding the lambs, Lord, help us to get our emotions in check. And say, "Lord, by your grace, I am going to get back on track. I'm going to get on target with what you really want me to be and to do. I don't want to let the emotional experiences I've had, the emotional injuries or hiccups that have happened to me in life, to cause me to have a mindset that I'd rather be fishing, I'd rather be out here by myself, I'd rather be a distraction to my friends and my family." That was the other six disciples that went with Peter. You know, Peter allowed his emotions to drive his mindset to the point he said, "I'll just go fishing." And all the rest of them around him said, "We'll go with you." I don't want to be the tipping point that cause people to go astray and get discouraged with the whole idea of living a sin-free life. I don't want to be part of that. In fact, I want to be on the other side. I want to be on the side that tips the scales to where people will say, I believe there's something to it. I believe it's possible. I believe we can, and by the grace of God, I will. I want to tip the scales that way. I don't want to tip the scales to, we might as well just go fishing. You pray for me.